Accession number 30636, Mr. Malcolm Barker, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about a typical day and spin-offs. From your time with the Essex Regiment, depot at Worley Barracks, Brentwood, from round about June 53 for 10 weeks, till August, I suppose. And we're just looking at a typical day, and one of the things you might have had in the morning was drill, and you mentioned that. And then we went on to literacy class, but we'll come back, leave that for it. What else might you do? I mean, what about PT? Would you have PT?
Yes, PT, yeah.
I think, Keita, what different types of PT did you do?
Well, first of all, they take you down the stores, give you a white shirt, pair of blue shorts, pair of slippers, and you had your army socks. Now, they would do what they used to say to you. You're all fit, we'll go for a little jog down the lane, which used to be 5 miles. I don't think many people would run 5 miles, you know, you walk it. And they say, come on, lad, catch up, late back for dinner and all. And you used to jog 5 miles, and you used to be strung out everywhere, panting and purring, come back. He said, right, now, he says.
Now, how are you?
Well, knackered at one time, but we've got. Then he come back, he said, now we will do 10 press ups. They all looked at him and said, we can't do that. Well, down on your hands, press up. And what they used to do, if a bloke wasn't doing right, come behind you, pull the back of your trousers up and down like that. And that would, what's name, start off. Then they would go further afield. Then there would be obstacle courses. You go to the gym, you walk along a bar, you climb up a rope, down a rope. You had these volleyballs, you picked up a bench, so you get working as groups type of thing. And the weak would, what's name, help the strong and the strong, so forth. And after about 4 or 5 weeks, it started to come together. You was marching as a group, you was PTing as a group, but also what they had also in the evening, because you had to pass a certain test, have a certain amount. And if you was a bit slow or a bit behind on the, they used to have evening for an hour or two, gym was open with an instructor. And you used to go, because they used to say, you must do this to pass the grade. If not, you're back squatted. So he said, what it means is, when it comes to the end of the 10 weeks, there will be a passing out parade, but you won't be on it because you've got to do another 4 to 6 weeks retraining again. So, of course, that would give you emphasis. And that's what used to happen there. And it was quite, what's the name? On top of that, with the exercise and that, we used to go in, as I say, with PT kit, cross fields, cross country. And I started to enjoy it, cross country runs and all that business. I got into it a bit more then.
So you got fitter.
Yeah.
Now, what other sessions? What about weapons training? I mean, you've done some of this.
Yeah.
Well, take me through how they taught you to shoot the right, you know.
It was near enough the same, but with more emphasis on live ammunition. 303, we went the same place, we got our rifles, ammunition in boxes, which was guarded by, put on a lorry, separate lorry to what the troops were, down to Perfleet rifle ranges, same place where I went as cadets. And this time it was 100 yards, 200 yards. Beyond. So they run through the safety drill with you, how to adjust your sights, give you a magazine, empty, and you would load 10 rounds yourself.
That's two clips.
Two clips. You take them out. Well, you had to load them individually, take them out of the clips, because that wasn't like the American rifles where you put the clip straight into the, you know, pull the bolt right in. Took the magazine off and you loaded them individually into it. Now, he said, the reason we do this, he said, is that you are loading the gun or the magazine. Now, if the magazine jams, there's only one person to blame, and that's you. So, of course, they give it two or three times, then you had a go in. Then I say, right, magazine's in your pouch, rifle down in the trenches. So there's about 10 of you in a line. You're all nervous, and he says, with 10 rounds, load. What is the first thing you do before you load a rifle? So I said, well, safety catch. All right, he said, you know. He said, you've been in the cadets by the way. He said, the others, they've got a, what's that? So you get down the trench, put the magazine, and you tap the bottom of the magazine to make sure it's, because some of them just put the magazine in. When they went to pull the bolt back and put a bullet up the spout, the magazine dropped out and it got dirty, so that, okay, so tap it in. Right, he said, safety catches off, one round, load. So you load it up the beach. Now, one or two of them had their fingers on the trigger and it went bang, bang, bang. And of course, the auditor screamed. He says, did I tell you to push the trigger? He said, you probably killed three blokes in the butts. Because down the end of the range, there were the butts where the targets come up, you had the pasters. And when you fired a weapon, the marker would say, ball, inner, outer, miss. And everybody has to go in them. Those that are in the pits firing now would then go down to the butts, vice versa. He said, some are shouting dirt and all. So he said, now, take it easy and just wait. And then we've done it. And that's when you've got the big kicks and bruises in your shoulders and all that. And he made sure your weapon was empty, out the, what's the name? The sergeant or whoever was there came along, checked your weapon, clear, bolt home, point your gun up, click, safe to catch on. You move out and go down to the butts. The butt people would then come to, what's that? And that's how it used to go on with the rifle.
Were you a decent shot or not? And if what makes a good shot? Because, you know.
Good makes a good shot is a steady hand, good eye, and knowing your weapon. I was a medium shot. I could hit the target every time, type of thing. I was very lucky because the training with the army cadets done that.
So, yeah. Now, so that's rifle training. Mm. What else? What about cleaning your rifle? Do you remember how you do that?
Yes. Well, when we first got the rifles in the stores, they were covered in oil. So you had to pour boiling water down them to clean the grease off. Then they issued with a small tin, like a tobacco tin. In there was a little can of oil, a pull-through, and some cleaning 4x2, what they call 4x2 body. And you had to put it down, pull it a number of times, then look in it, see if it's all nice and clear, no specks left in it. And that's what you had to do every time.
Now, wasn't that kept in the butt? Or
they used to have a bottle in the butt. It was a round, like a lipstick, in the butt. But then what they'd done is, it was in there, and what they'd done is they give you a tin. So you put the tin in your pouch, and it was always there, type of thing.
And how would they inspect the rifle?
They would inspect to come along. Your magazine would be out. Well, if you, so it was out, laying there, or in your magazine. Then they come along, pull the bolt back, unlock it, pull the bolt out, and look at the top where the firing pin is on the bolt to see if you've cleaned all the carbon off. Because firing a rifle, the bolt head got carbonised. And the best way to do that was with a pencil or a bit of fine emery cloth. Then what they would do is hold it up to the light, look down, look at it. Or if you had a magazine on in a bolt out, he would put his thumbnail into the breech and look down it to see it was there. And that was one way of.
Now, what are the, so that's the rifle training. What are the, what about bayonet?
Bayonet practice, yes. We used to have a big assault course. And you lined up with your rifle, you had a helmet on, which was a bit heavy, small pack, pouches, and you're all standing in line and they say, parade shirt, prepare to fix bayonets. So you pull your bayonet out, put it on the top, lock it on. 9 times out of 10, you'll always get one or two that will put it on and it's not locked. So when he says, ready for bayonet charge, and a boom, boom, then he, yeah, all that to go and do it. Then you say, right, first of all, we'll walk down to the sacks. They had little targets on them. Now, jab. So you had to jab it hard to get the bayonet in. And sometimes he would tell you to twist it to pull it out or just pull it out. Some of them went up to the sack and just put the point in. And he'd come behind and shove the rifle in. He said, not going to do any damage like that. So jab the bayonet in every time. Then pull it out, pull it out of the pool, run on to the next one, right way down to about 4 or 5 sacks.
Were they still teaching you to do all the shouting and screaming while you were
doing it? Oh, yeah. He said, the idea we do that is to take out the nervousness. He said, when you run down, go, ah! He said, you can either think it's me, you can either think it's somebody else, somebody you don't like, the mother-in-law, he said, or anything. Just scream, stick it in, pull it out, pull onto the next one, and keep doing that towards the end. And sometimes, if your bayonet wasn't fixed on, when you pulled it out, it was still stuck in the bowl type of thing. He said, well, that'd be no good. He said, because you'll be dead by then. It was the emphasis of disarm, you know, disarming the enemy type of thing.
So that's bayonet training.
Yes.
Hand grenade then.
Yeah.
I mean, because you've done a bit, but tell us how they taught you in the
army. Well, first of all, you go into a classroom. Anything with explosives, you go into a classroom and you're lectured by the armourer. And you've got a big diagram, 8x4, of a grenade, Mills 36 fragment grenade, because it was all in little squares. We used to call them pineapples. And drawing there, it'll show you the lever, the plunger, and the fuses. Screw bottom. And what they used to do is have the number of fuses, like 3, 5, and 7, laid out. And your job was, you clean the grenade, you put whatever fuse in, if you want a quick fuse, if you want a fuse to last, and they tell you what fuses to put on, screw it in. Same emphasis, if you nip the fuse, you lose your fingers. Even dropping it, it could go off.
So just the same as you'd had before?
Yeah. So, of course, they do that, and he said, you won't get the fuses until you get down to the range, but they have to go through all the safety procedure. So, down to Purfleet, you'd be down there all day, so they will bring up all the food in canisters, but... So you get down there, don't forget safety first, make sure your pin is in, it's correctly safe, down into the ditch, and the old tanks were still there, I think one or two of them still there nowadays, probably. Right, he says, we will do a 7-second fuse, so you put, and they was all coloured, so you put the 7-second fuse in, unscrew the base, put it in, screw the base up. Now you stand sideways. Although the target's there, you stand looking that way. And you say, make ready. So you put the grenade in your hand, finger through the ring. He said, when you pull the pin, hang on to it. So the bloke said, why? He said, well, if the grenade don't go off, you go out there, pick it up, put the pin back in top. So, you know, so pulled it out, hang back. And he used to come along and say, throw, throw, throw. And you hang back and you threw it over your head. Look down. Explosion up. Well, we was doing training. We'd done our, well, next lot come along, and some get nervous, which is natural. I was still nervous, like I was saying, because you know what the damage is. So this bloke gets there, pulls the pin out. The sergeant says to him, ready, pulls his arm back and hits his hand on the bank, drops the grenade. And it's live because it's gone click. So he's there, and it was 7 seconds. Two NCOs grabbed him out, laid him straight on the floor. Boof. He said, you could have been killed, so could we. It's bound to make you nervous. So then anybody like that, they put them through the dummy grenade until they got used to it, then back into the, what's that? And you teach you to, if you was in a trench and the enemy were advancing, they would put a shorter fuse on, and you got all the same thing, but instead of throwing it, you just put it over the bank and let it roll down and get down. So it blew up.
So that's hand grenade.
Yep.
What else?
Bren gun.
Tell us about the Bren gun.
Very good gun, very accurate. It was better than what some of the weapons of the Americans had. It was spot on. You could fire single, rapid. Although it was a bit heavy to carry, but it was a good gun. It was a platoon defence weapon. Medium machine gun, it was very good. LMG, light machine gun.
And did you actually do all this blindfold stripping and everything? That people...
Yes, yeah. What you've done, because the reason they said they'd do that, you've done it with a rifle first, the reason they said it could be at night, and you've done a lot of firing, and you can't put a light on, so you feel for the what's name. And when it comes to the Bren gun, what they would do sometimes, because the Bren gun, I mean, push a button, slide the bat out, take the mechanism outside, lay it down on the side with a spring. When they do it blindfolded, they would say to the bloke, shh, and they would remove a spring or a pin. You've done it on a table, but you could be in a field, you could be in a trench. And, of course, you know it, something should be there, but you don't know exactly, and you're filling all round the table like this. Then they put it back in again. So when you put it back in, and once you've done that, then you cock the gun, fire it, mechanism go forward, and that was it. We had also then, we still had Sten guns.
No, that's what I was going to ask that next. Tell us about the Sten gun.
Sten gun was known as the 7-6 weapon. It was very easy to make and very little parts. It had a metal butt, which you pushed a button, slipped it off. You unscrewed the back, it had a big spring, firing mechanism, magazine, safety catch, single or automatic, and that's all there was to us. An unscrewed at the barrel, short barrel, whatever, and that's all was to the Sten gun. But with a Sten gun, it was a very dangerous weapon.
Why?
Because it could fire with a bump of a truck, drop it on the ground, it could go off if you did. Because we was riding the truck going down to Purfleet, and this chap had his Sten gun. Unfortunately, he put a loaded magazine on it. And he was riding along with it, safety catch on, boom. And it went right through the top of the wagon, fired. And that was what they said. You could drop it on the ground. If you haven't got the safety catch on, boom, 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 the magazine. And it was a 9mm bullet, small 9mm bullet.
Now, what was it like as a weapon?
Close quarters, good. It was a bit awkward, but it was also dangerous because you put it across your arm like that. And you're on the gun, if you can manage it, they had a small lip where your hand should grip there. Now, what would happen sometimes is, they told us, we never experienced, but they told us that, take the magazine out, if your finger was in the way and you accidentally pulled the trigger, you lost the top of the finger because it used to go into the opening, the aperture of the magazine casing. But close quarters or long distance, no. It's mainly for, you know, parachutes, close quarters, terrorist work, and it was quite a good
weapon. It was supposed to be inaccurate, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It is. Over 100 yards, between 150 and 200 yards, the bullets would stray. But close quarters, 50 to 100 yards, excellent weapon to go into attack with.
Now, what are the weapons? Mortars?
Two-inch mortars. We used to call them the drain pipes. They're a small two-inch barrel, and you had a small base, but not a big base. And it was activated by dropping the bomb in and pulling the string. But some were fixed pinned. So what you used to do is unscrew the cap, drop it down, pull, fire. So with a fixed one, drop it in. But sometimes what it used to do is fur up in the barrel, because you could unscrew the barrel and replace a new one. We were out on basic training. This happened in Germany, but I won't. Do you want me to go into that now?
We'll come back to that when we get to Germany.
But that was really good.
What about the Piet, or it might have been replaced by
the rocket launcher? We trained on what they called an Energa. It's a Lee Enfield rifle with a grenade firing cup on the end of it, and it was similar to a small mortar bomb.
So it's a rifle grenade?
Rifle grenade, yeah. And they used to put cartridges in that and fire it. And they always said to us, make sure you put a grenade cartridge in and not a live cartridge, because otherwise, boom. And it used to go quite distance. And what you had to do once you fired it is go and find your dummy grenade, bring it back with you. Quite effective.
Any other weapons?
We were given a demonstration on flamethrowers.
Now, tell me about that. That's quite a new. Was that there at Purfleet? Or was that later?
No, it was later.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Anything else in basic?
Pistol.
Tell us about that.
It's we didn't have the 45s, and there were 38 pistols, mainly officers. But you tried all these weapons out because you never knew when you might need it, or a weapon come in handy, and you could pick it up and fire it. You used to break it open, put the ammunition in, load it up, and fire it, type of thing.
Now, how accurate were you with that? Because they're supposed to be quite difficult to aim.
They are. They're about 25 yards. Other than that, no good at all.
So that's weapons training generally.
Yeah.
Now, what other sessions of training? You said map reading.
Yes.
Now, tell us about map reading training.
Well, they would take you into a classroom and show you a map, show you what a church looks like, a crossing looks like, a river looks like, contours of hills, mountains and all that business. Then they would give you figures, so many across, so many down and all that. And they used to say, I think it was along the passage and up the stairs. So you go along the map and up the crossing. I wasn't much good on that map reading, but I used to go out and the blokes used to say to me, "Mal, we've lost." I said, "No, you're not." I said, "Do you remember that big oak tree over there? We passed that on the way back. Or do you remember this building here and that?" Things like that, I was all right. But actually reading a map, I wasn't. They would never let me loose on Dartmoor with a map anyway.
Did you actually do any live map reading exercises?
Yes, yeah. Take you out at night, drop you off with the compass, drop you off in the twos and threes, about 5 or 10 miles outside of Brentwood, and make your own way back. You had to get back in a certain time, in any way you can, type of thing.
Now, any other training sessions?
Unarmed combat.
Tell me about that.
Well, they say to you, sometimes you may come at close quarters with your enemy. Your rifle may get knocked out your hand. You may just have a bayonet and you have to go through the various protecting yourself, where to jab him, sneak up on him at night, cut his throat and all that business type of thing. Yeah. You've done that. Also, in it, boxing. They got a bloke, same height or same weight as you, and they will put you in a ring for 3 minutes and you will knock bells out of each other, and the one that was left standing was the winner. And everybody in the troop had to go through that type of thing. And that's how they picked out their boxing teams.
So it wasn't milling like the parachuters do, where there's no defence. This was
actual boxing. Yeah.
And how did you do at that? Do you like boxing?
Well, I got knocked down a few times, but I didn't like it too much. So.
Any other training sessions?
Other than that, no.
Now, so you'd be doing these sessions through the day.
Over the 10 weeks, that was.
Now, what about at the end of the day? What about preparing for kit inspections or room inspections? Because you mentioned he was going to...
Yeah.
Room and kit inspections.
After you've done all that, of course, your kit's dirty, you have to... What's that? Blanco it up.
People don't know what Blanco is now.
It's where you get your canvas belt, you put a khaki Blanco. Like polishing shoes, it was a khaki Blanco. So you wash your kit, ply the Blanco with a toothbrush. It came in a small, like a boot polish tin with Blanco in it. And you buy that yourself. That wasn't given. You buy that out, your 15 shillings that was left of your money or 10 shillings. And you had to Blanco all your kit, webbing and that. Then you clean your boots. For kit layout, you had a box pillar like that. You folded your sheets up and your pillars up into the same size. Then you wrap a blanket round it. Now, we've shown how to do this. You laid out with your second pair of boots, highly polished, 13 studs, soles upwards, and the studs at the shine and the bottom of the boots had to be black. Then you come down a bit.
Now, what about the rest of the boot? I'll come back. You know, I mean, how much polish, spit and polish was
Well, when you got the boots, their skins, it's all crackly. It's all crisscross. And you had to bone out the what's name. You used to sit up at night with a candle, boot polish and a spoon. What they call boning it out to get a shine.
How do you do it?
Well, you sit there, group you around, laugh, joke, crack you. Candle, warm the polish up, put it on. Then you warm the end of the spoon up and you bone it round and round and round and round in circles until you get all the creases out of the boot. Once you've done that, then you start to polish them. You have to do the toes and the heels. Now, some people said that doing that, you deface government property because it weakens it. But that was bull in training. So, of course, then you had a soap dish with a bar of soap, never used. You had laces rolled up into Catherine wheels, never used. Your knife, fork and spoon you was used in mess tins. Then your webbing. Toothpaste, never used. Toothbrush, never used. Then you used to have what was known as a button stick. When you got your grey coat, you know, slipped it in. That was polished, all laid up. Shaving equipment, that was all polished up. Your webbing, all laid out there. Everything in your locker had to be lined. No pictures of ladies, no pictures of family, just plain nothing. So that was show. Then come the day of the inspection.
Now, what about the room itself?
Oh, the room.
The floor, the stove.
As I said, when we first went in there, it was a wooden floor, and there was a bit this big bumper, coal. Now, on the day of the well, day before the inspection, you wasn't allowed to have a fire, no matter how cold it was. And the stove had to be blackened, because you could buy that black polish for the downpipe, and it all had to be black and shiny. All the utensils, like the shovel, the tweezers and the poker, they had to be lined up. Now, the bump, the floor, had to be shined. When you went in there, it was manky. So they supplied you with a polish. But the bumping machine, it was a handle with a big size of a box type of thing. And you had two blokes pulling it, one bloke standing it. And you had to go backwards and forwards, making the floor shine. Then when you came in, ready for, you took your shoes or boots off, so you walked in your sock, so you didn't, and you do the last bit of dusting with the floor. The table had to be scrubbed white. The windows had to be cleaned. The windowsills had to be washed down. Top of your locker for dust had to be done. And everything had to be spick and span. Then also on top of that, your rifle had to be there, ready for inspection as well. Plus yourself.
Now, what was the actual inspection like?
You always had the dread when you that you've missed something out. And 9 times out of 10 you do. You'll get an officer or the sergeant major come in, pair of white gloves. Comes in, room comes to attention, stand by your beds. Come up to you, says, what's your name, number? Malcolm Barker. No, Barker M. Barker M, what's your number? I think it's 2. Don't think, you should know it. Oh, 2289-6297. What? Private. What? Private. What about the sir? Oh, I said, oh, sorry, sir. Right, he said, fatigues. Go to the next bloke. And you had to know your name, like Barker M or ME, your religion, your army number, what's your sergeant's name, and all that business. So, of course, then they come to the bed, stand there, he looks at it. Half inch out of line. Don't like the look of that. And if he's in a bad mood, he would grip your bed and upend it. And everything goes on the floor.
The officer would, or the sergeant?
Either the officer or the sergeant major. Yeah, either. Right, upend it. Wasn't allowed to move until he's been round to every bed. If he does one, you can guarantee you're in a bad... What's the name? Yeah. Then at the old white gloves used to go top of the locker.
Rubbing it along.
Call that clean. Then it, on top of your locker, you had your big pack, small pack, and all this business. And he'd wash that off. And then go around the room. This room is not fit for pigs. I'll be back in 2 hours. So you couldn't go anywhere, so you had to do everything again. And that's how we used to go on regular, like that, for room inspection. Until you got it all gelled together, type of thing.
And then do you mind the bull?
Sometimes it got a bit of a bind, and sometimes... Because when you hear the next block laughing and joking, going down to the naffy, and you've got to stand there, and then what we done was we got a bit of white cloth, and we used to go round all the ledges and everything, and that, or somebody had forgot to done something in his tin locker. When he opened the door, everything came out on the floor. Be back in another 2 hours, and that could go on till about 10 o'clock at night.
So it just had to be done.
Discipline and cleanliness.